Back together, you and I settling in for a Tuesday, March 29th, 2022 edition of Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud if gun violence is really a public health issue that's being debated at the General Assembly. Quinnipiac University Professor Emeritus David Cadden talked about the significance of Sikorsky's agreement to keep thousands of jobs here in Connecticut for at least the next 20 years. And we welcomed University of New Haven Cybercrime Center Director Damon Petraglia on the show to talk about a cyber attack from an alleged Russian hacker group that hit Bradley International Airport. You gun owners, be advised. And I'm going to keep an eye on this for you, but I was kind of, you know, combing the different sites here in Connecticut on what to start with today on this Tuesday, March 29th. And this immediately caught my eye. This story from Hugh McQuaid in the ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com. Lawmakers tackle gun violence as a public health crisis. Now, you've seen this tossed around. This is not the first time you're hearing this in Connecticut. It's happened all over the country. And in Hartford, Hugh McQuaid writes in part, a short public hearing agenda, including a bill declaring gun violence a public health emergency in Connecticut, drew hours of testimony from over 100 speakers. The Public Health Committee was poised to conclude its hearing set for this year's session, but not before what promised to be a marathon forum on five bills, which attracted a lot of public attention, which, of course, they will, because they have to do with guns. And just as much as there are staunch defenders, mainly on the left, of abortion rights in this state, there will be a lot of staunch defenders on the right for gun rights set of debates going forward here. Much of the public testimony was regarding a bill aimed at curbing gun violence in Connecticut. One bill would declare gun violence a public health emergency and establish a gun violence prevention office within the public health department to collect data on gun violence and administer grants to organizations committed to reducing it. Now, that all sounds fine, and I'm not going to kid you here. Of course I want less gun violence. Of course you want less gun violence. The amount of gun violence is still disconcerting, whether it's in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Waterbury, even the suburbs. And by the way, I'll have a story coming up on an area town that arrested a convicted felon, shocking, with a gun a couple of days ago. But I bring this up, be very, very, very careful on this. Don't get swept up with, well, the violence of guns. Of course we need to make it a public health crisis. Two reasons why you gotta pump the brake on that. Number one, ask yourself, is gun violence really a public health crisis? Or is it a crisis of morals? Is it a crisis of a family structure that may not there? It is not a crisis of public health. Is it a crime crisis? I mean, really, now they could say, obviously, well, the toll the gun violence takes on families and husbands and wives and kids. Okay, I get that. I understand that. But is it really a public health crisis, or is it a crisis of, I shudder to say the word, I'm sorry, is it a crisis not of public health, but of criminality? Remember, it's gun violence is a crime. First and foremost, gun violence is criminal activity. A segment of society, at least at the time that they are arrested, does not have a regard for human life or human civility. Now, is that a public health thing? I don't know. You tell me. Now, the other reason that you have to be careful, and I don't know the intricacies of this here in Connecticut, but be very, very, very careful about this. Even if you're a legal gun owner, because under the guise of a public health crisis, and this generally varies from state to state, region to region, sometimes laws can be passed, sometimes, not always, but sometimes laws are passed, they're fast-tracked, they are written in such a way that because there's a so-called health crisis situation that sometimes, not always, but sometimes does not afford the same amount of scrutiny to these bills. Now, I don't know the exact way that works here in Connecticut, but in other states, some gun stuff and some other laws have been fast-tracked because, well, there's a crisis and we have to do it this way. Well, no, calm down. So again, be careful here, especially if you are a legal, law-abiding, non-gang-banging gun owner, a guy or gal who follows all the rules. Be wary of the public health crisis designation for gun violence. And there are a lot of folks very happy with recent news that the folks at Sikorsky Lockheed and the governor have come together with a tentative deal to keep Sikorsky making helicopters and other stuff here in the state and its corporate headquarters for 20 years, another generation. That is good news. And to talk about that, a return appearance by this gentleman who's been on with us numerous times, professor of entrepreneurship and strategy, professor emeritus at Quinnipiac University, David Cadden is with us. Hey, professor, it's Paul here again. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm terrific. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well. Very good, Professor. Good to talk to you again. Well, look, I'm no expert here, Professor. Maybe you can brief us a little on this. On the surface, this looks really good. Talk about this deal here involving Sikorsky Lockheed.
I think not only on the surface, but deep down, this is an excellent deal for the state, for Sikorsky's employees, and for the employees of the nearly 250 subcontractors that are in Connecticut that supply Sikorsky.
Yeah, that's one issue, Professor. I'm glad you brought up. People see, you know, they see and they hear the name Sikorsky. But as, Professor, with a lot of these military subcontractors, people don't know that they exist. They, you know, a lot of these big contractors don't make all the parts they do and they have to subcontract.
No, and in the case of Lockheed Sikorsky, they are subcontracting from 250 firms just in the state of Connecticut. So think in terms of the number of jobs and the small to mid-sized enterprises that are being supported by the fact that they'll continue to have Sikorsky in the state of Connecticut.
Now, is it helped here for Professor Cadden that this is a military contractor, basically, in this situation here when we're talking about finished product here, and not, say, a private enterprise or stockholder-held company that relies more on consumer-based or commercial products? So the Pentagon, likely, if they get these contracts to Sikorsky, is one of the real driving forces behind this?
The vast majority of sales by Sikorsky are to the military, not only to the United States military, but to the world's military. They do have commercial helicopter production, but it's going to be overwhelmingly military operations, particularly in light of the fact that the Army is planning a future vertical lift programs. And two of those, Sikorsky is planning to compete actively in it. And should Sikorsky win either one or hopefully both, the 7,000 employees of Sikorsky in the state, I think, would significantly increase.
Professor Emeritus of Entrepreneurship and Strategy, David Cadden, is the guest from Quinnipiac University. Professor, hang on. Stay right there. We'll be right with you. First, though, traffic and weather together right on the button, 336 on WICC. And our guest for a few more minutes, always great to have him on, Professor Emeritus of Entrepreneurship and Strategy at Quinnipiac University. Professor David Cadden. You know, Professor, when we see this, we kind of take pride in Connecticut, the workforce we have here, and thousands of jobs, and I talk about this all the time on the program. It is, though, disheartening, is it not? I seem to think so, that it's great we have the jobs here, as you say, basically in line with military spending and sales, and even in the eastern part of the state, an electric boat, but yet consumer-oriented companies, private enterprises, are not really to that scale, Professor, coming to Connecticut or even looking because of our high costs of business operation here. Something that I've been told by experts contributes to the wage problem we have here in Connecticut, the very rich and the very poor, and a lot not really in the middle.
Well, the center of the economy has always been the lifeblood of America. And if we begin to lose the small and mid-sized enterprises, then we begin to lose the ability to have a successful middle class. However, I think that a successful contractor such as Sikorsky not only supports those small to mid-sized business enterprises, but it can also support educational institutions, mm-hmm. not only for white-collar workers, but I think more importantly, the community colleges being able to provide education for advanced manufacturing techniques. And if we are able to have a cadre graduate that would go into businesses such as Sikorsky, we may also be able to have the workers of the 21st century that would be available to start up businesses in Connecticut. So if the state, in addition to supporting Sikorsky, begins to have programs that make us look more attractive to businesses, particularly to startups, I think we can turn around the reputation that we have as being one of the most business unfriendly states in the union.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, Professor, it's not just that single job that we see in a number of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. I always remind folks that, yeah, that's nice, but what about all the coffee and donut shops and the restaurants and the other businesses that get that money that flows to them, you know, from all of these workers at places like Sikorsky and Electric Boat? You know, I would shudder to think, Professor Cadden, what the ripple effect would be if we actually ever lost in this state and generations to come the amount of workers we have connected to those industries. It'd be shocking.
We saw a downturn in employment because of changes in contracts with Electric Boat, and it was devastating in the local community to places that you just mentioned. You know, coffee shops, places where people would get go to restaurants and have lunch or dinner after work. So yeah, it percolates throughout the entire economy. So if you lose large centers of manufacturing, there's ramifications far beyond the number of people that would be unemployed by shutting down one of those operations.
Professor, thank you. We appreciate it. Good to have you on when there's good news. Professor of Entrepreneurship and Strategy Emeritus at Quinnipiac University, David Cadden, on the agreement between Sikorsky Lockheed and the governor to have the production facilities and its corporate headquarters stay in Connecticut for 20 years. Great stuff. Professor, thank you. We'll be in touch down the road. Take care and thanks.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Appreciate it there. Professor Emeritus of Entrepreneurship and Strategy at Quinnipiac, Professor David Cadden. So that's good, right? Over 7,000 jobs being safe and secure, hopefully in the state. And they've got the established helicopter programs, new programs coming online. Listen, I know people don't. And look, we there are times where we tone down military spending. You know, I get it. But sometimes there's nothing wrong with military spending, man. Sometimes it's okay. You know, those people that work at Sikorsky, that while they're just making items of destruction, well, yeah, but that's some high-tech stuff they're putting together. Can you ever imagine if Sikorsky left? Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? If that big facility there on the river was ever turned to a shopping mall or something? Oh, sweet God. What about electric boat? I mean, seriously. It's amazing how much commerce or how much pay is connected to just two or three things. I mean, imagine if the eastern part of the state, right? Imagine if the eastern part of the state didn't have the casinos or electric boat in Groton. What would be out there? No offense to anybody who runs a small business out there or what, but I mean, good Lord, what would be out there if we didn't have the casinos, for example, or electric boat? So go play the slots and build those subs. Yeah. Let's build a few more nuclear subs. Keep them Ruskies at bay. And we continue with an unusual story here. Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. Bradley Airport in Windsor Locks hit with a cyber attack today. That's according to the Connecticut Airport Authority. And the situational, rough word, a lot of syllables there, good in Scrabble. And the Situational Awareness Update Service, CyberKno. And apparently this had something maybe to do with Ukraine, something. Is it the Russians? Or is it some 14-year-old kid in his basement who skipped out of school? Maybe this next gentleman can help us. Damon Petraglia joins us. He's director of the Cyber Crime Center at the University of New Haven to chat about this and more. Damon, hi, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Paul.
What do you see in this whole thing now? Number one, I guess Bradley was hit, but what have you been able to glean from this so far?
Well, so far, I mean, it's under investigation right now, right? It's a pretty active situation. It's not a surprise by any means. These things happen all the time. We were just advised last week by the FBI that, we need to prepare for these things. There's been a lot of chatter that there's going to be an uptick in different kinds of attacks. So not a surprise at all.
Is this, though, maybe, Damon, to in some ways put a little fright in America? I mean, when you hit an airport, right, and you hit maybe a website, a seating service, something that's not mission critical, is that maybe intended to have people think, well, geez, I mean, like the government does, too. What could they hit the air traffic system? Could they hit deeper? Is that a fear here? Are those systems reachable by hackers or not? What do you think?
Well, a couple things. One, I think this is an attack like this. It's a warning. That's essentially what it would be to me. Like you said in the very beginning, it could be a 14-year-old kid, too. We don't know just yet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a few people that have a pretty good idea, but I haven't looked at all the evidence. So could be anything. But if it is something bigger, it's a warning. And then, to answer your second question, are the other parts of this, more critical parts, reachable? Unfortunately, they are.
See, that makes people, Damon, say, well, wait a minute. We landed men on the moon in 1969, and we went back a few times, and we're getting ready to go back again. So don't we have, and I'm just asking this rhetorically, we all know what the answer to this is, Damon. People are going, in their cars listening to us right now going, geez, can't we step it up on this? And your answer to that would be what exactly?
Well, we can. We can step it up, but stepping it up takes time and resources, right? And we don't have enough security professionals to fill the existing jobs as of right now. The problem is it's not about just securing every single system, right? It's more about managing the risk. And no matter what you do on the internet, there's going to be some residual risk. You can't lock everything down or else you wouldn't be able to have business anymore. So there's a balance that needs to be struck. And anytime there's a balance, there's risk involved. And so that's where the difficulty in this field is. It's how much do we put towards it, and how much risk are we willing to live with?
Damon Petraglia is the guest. He's a practitioner in residence for criminal justice, and he directs the Cybercrime Center at the University of New Haven. Damon, hang on. We'll be right back with you. First, though, traffic and weather together right here at 436 on WICC. And believe it or not, earlier today, there was a hacking, a cyber attack on Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks. A website, the Bradley website, started getting a little wonky, a little crazy around 1 o'clock, about an hour before we got on the air. And apparently the monitoring service CyberKno reported that Bradley was hit. And apparently it was hit by, well, reportedly, allegedly, hit by some sort of a Russian hacking group, and a lot of people claim to know who that is. And joining us to talk a little bit more about this is Damon Petraglia, a practitioner in residence for criminal justice. He directs the Cybercrime Center at the University of New Haven. You know, Damon, it's interesting. A lot of these hackers, and I guess we kind of maybe know who did this today, they want themselves known. I mean, I guess, did it not take long to figure out allegedly where this came from?
Well, a lot of times groups will take credit very quickly because they do want to be known. It all depends on what the end goal is. And, you know, as I said earlier, that if this is a warning, it may be a specific group that wants to let you know this is a warning and that something bigger will eventually come.
Do you know any background, or is anyone familiar with this Russian group, KillNet? Have you heard of them before? Are they new? Have they been around? Do they want us to know about them?
I do know about them. I don't know who is actually in their group. I mean, you can Google it and figure out who these guys are.
I remember, Damon, listening years and years ago to a lot of overnight, late night radio. And, you know, when they get into some of these topics, some of these weird offbeat topics. And the late Art Bell always used to have guys and gals on, Damon, who started 15, 20 years ago warning about this stuff. And they would say, listen, this is not crazy stuff. And, you know, we're called to testify in front of Congress. And, you know, they say, listen, this is going to happen to some level or another. And you've been involved in the federal government before on some level, or working for the feds, Damon, before. And so these warnings are not new, are they? Are we responding better now? Because I know the worry for years is that, you know, you would try to explain some of these things to members of Congress who basically would have problems finding a light switch, and there would be kind of a poo-pooing of this. Are we finally getting to where we should be in this as far as working against it or not?
So we're getting better. It is getting better. But we're by no means where we need to be. You know, the security industry is a phenomenal industry, and there's some really exceptionally smart and dedicated people throughout the industry. Unfortunately, again, we're not resourced as well as we should be. And the technology is everywhere. You really couldn't work or live without it at this point. But very few people really have an understanding of the technologies that they use every single day. So very few people are able to protect it the way it needs to be.
Are we getting enough fresh talent coming out of colleges, Damon, who say, yeah, I want to go into the cyber protection business. Yeah, it's not sexy looking, and people might think it's a boring existence, but I, me, he, she, we need to do it. Maybe for, you know, for service to the country on a military level or even in private industry. Is it tough to get young folks with the brains that can do that into the actual business?
No, it's actually not that tough. It's such a huge upcoming field, and it has been for a while. It is so plentiful with new jobs that, you know, attracting good talent is not really too bad. It's not that tough. Keeping them in any one place for an extended time is probably the toughest part. But attracting young, good talent is not an issue. But again, there just simply isn't enough to fill the spaces that we really need.
And that leads other nations, other predatory nations, Damon, to go out and hire, I guess, for lack of a better term, electronic mercenaries, right? Because a lot of these nations don't want to have a direct connection here. Some do, some don't. But from what I've been told by experts like yourself, okay, here's some money. Who wants to work for us? And just as much as we have mercenary troops, there are mercenary hackers, right?
Yeah, there absolutely are. There's definitely hackers for hire. Every developed country has a cyber force as far as an intelligence level or military level hackers working directly for them that are very well protected. But yeah, mercenaries are out there. So, you know, you can buy what you need.
Yeah, right. Anywhere, right? Either lawn equipment or hackers and everything in between. Damon Petraglia has been the guest. He is the director of the Cybercrime Center at the University of New Haven. Damon, good to talk with you, and we'll keep in touch and hook up down the road. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me today.
Appreciate it. Damon Petraglia there. All right. Check him out. A practitioner in residence for criminal justice and director of the Cyber Crime Center at the University of New Haven. So, yeah, this apparently is a Russian hacking group, Killnet, K-I-L-L-N-E-T. And for some reason, the feds are still trying to figure out why on earth did they pick Bradley International Airport. Well, maybe because it's a decent-sized airport. It's not a JFK. It's not a LaGuardia. It's not Logan in Boston. It's not LAX. It's not O'Hare in Chicago. But it was big enough to get the attention of folks, right?